Welcome back, everyone. I'm excited to have you back again this week. Well, we all saw it. The Atlanta Braves a few weeks ago signed Adam Duvall to come back for a third time in the past few years. And that just kind of brings me back to, you know what? We need to talk about the Jared Kelnick trade and why it makes sense. Break it down. Or even if it doesn't make sense in your head, kind of break out why the Braves may have done it. Platooning with Adam Duvall is fantastic. But with that, let's get started. Alright, so we're all probably pretty excited about the Adam Duvall signing, especially at only $3 million. It makes sense to bring him in to be a platoon partner with Jared Kelnick, which is what Mark Bowman said. And the good thing, too, is that Adam Duvall is a good fourth outfielder in general because he can fill in a pinch in all three outfield spots. It looks like Forrest Wall may also make the roster. You know, I record this a little, you know, few weeks before it airs sometimes, so it's possible that Forrest Wall does not make the roster, but it's looking like he will. So the Braves are in a good spot in the outfield, probably one of easily top three outfields in Major League Baseball, if not the top, when you consider the bench as well. You know, the Yankees, when they're healthy, will have a good outfield with Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and Alex Verdugo, but I would argue that Michael Harris, Ronald Acuna, and a Jared Kelnick, Adam Duvall platoon is right up there with them. Not to mention, it's been a long time since the Yankees have had a healthy outfield for the majority of a season, so it's going to be interesting to see for the Yankees. I don't wish injuries on anyone, but we're just being real here. All right, let's dig into the Jared Kelnick trade because it was quite complicated. A lot of moves were made. A lot of subsequent trades were made because there's a lot of salaries that moved around, right? So when it happened, I'm sure some of you were shocked like I was. I was not anticipating the Braves bringing in Jared Kelnick. This type of deal is very rare. You don't see when someone trades a young player like this or someone that seeks out a young player like this that has really only had about half a season that was really good with the rest that were not. Now, Jared Kelnick is also, if you didn't know this, he was the 6th overall draft pick in 2018. So it's not like this is random. He also tore up the minor leagues. With over 1,300 plate appearances in the minor leagues, he had a .295 batting average, .370 on-base percentage, and a .538 slugging. So he absolutely destroyed minor leagues. It just so happens that in major leagues, the first 2 years, he struggled quite a bit. In fact, he was so bad in the first 2 years. In 555 plate appearances, he had a .168 batting average, a .251 on base percentage, and a .338 slugging. But his 2023 was much better. He had a .253, .327, .419. That's a .108 runs created plus, which means it was 8% better than league average. So, of course, if your number 8 hitter is 8% better than league average, I'm going to go ahead and say that that's a pretty darn good offense, okay? Jared Kelnick was never supposed to be an all-star when they brought him in. Now, based on the way he was tearing up minor leagues and his draft spot, you know, I'm sure the potential is there in some scouts' minds. I haven't interviewed him, but I'm assuming that that's the case. But either way, let's get back to the trade. It was a 5-player deal that went in between the Mariners and the Braves, obviously. And then there was a bunch of other trades that happened to move salary around. You know, we saw guys from all different teams. You know, the Braves traded Marco Gonzalez, who they gained from the trade. They've traded with the Angels, the Pirates, you know. They got Matt Carpenter and flipped him. I mean, there's a lot of other players. Why they didn't flip him? I believe they ended up they released Carpenter. But there's a lot of moves that happened with the Braves where they either tried to move money around by flipping players, and they were successful with some, not successful with others. But all that stemmed from starting with the Jared Kelnick trade, ultimately, to try to move money around. And what ended up happening was, after all was said and done, the Braves ended up paying $29.4 million approximately for him and David Fletcher this season. That's including all the trades that happened. That includes luxury tax fees and things like that. I got to give a shout out to Nakahoma Nation if you're unfamiliar with them. They're really, really good with tracking things like luxury tax penalties and things like that that go along with salaries. They're even better than me. And so I just got to give a shout to them because I reached out to them to make sure that this number was right. So shout out to them. Check them out if you would like. They've got their own podcast, Twitter, all that stuff. So check them out. Either way. So that's what the Braves ended up paying this year. But why did they do that? Why would they pay that much for a player that, even though had a lot of hype early on, has kind of struggled in Major League Baseball outside of the first half? Well, you could argue for he was still above average for the entire season last year. Well, the thing is that money is only for this year, right? The Braves paid an overhead cost of $29.4 million for Kelnick and Fletcher. Fletcher is really kind of just a salary dump type situation. He's a bench player at best for the Braves. He probably won't even start the season. Actually, I know he won't start the season. That was just announced. He will not start the season on the Atlanta Braves roster, which makes sense. That's what I've been saying since they got him, since they signed Luis Guillerme, that Guillerme would be on the opening day roster because he doesn't have any options left. And then Fletcher will be in the minor leagues, and then the first time an infielder is injured, you'll see Fletcher come back up to cover that. That's what makes the most sense because Fletcher has an option left and Guillerme does not. So why would you carry two backup infielders when you can just stash one in the minors? That's getting paid anyway, so it's not like he's getting hurt financially from it. Either way, the thing that makes sense for the Braves to do this with Kelnick is that if you had a guy that's averaging 8% above league average, and as far as offense goes, not to mention he was in the top 12% or so with his arm strength in Major League Baseball, and he's a top 30% sprint speed guy as well. He's definitely got the tools to be really effective. Last year, if he would have played 162 games, it would have been a 2 wins above replacement year. That's not, again, nothing insane, but it's the number 8 guy. And then after this season, you know, they Braves paid a lot this season, but after this season, that's his first year of arbitration. And we've talked about, if you need to know more about arbitration, we talked about it back in season 1 with a breakdown of how arbitration works. But really, in a nutshell, arbitration, but when a player reaches arbitration, they're still really, really cheap. Especially a player like Kelnick who hasn't done much. You're looking at like the first year of arbitration being around $1 million, and then year 2 will be a slight raise from that, and then in year 3 will be a slight raise from that. In fact, he's under team control through the 2028 season. So he's a Super 2 player, meaning he's going to go through arbitration for 4 years rather than the typical 3. Again, if you want to learn more about that, go back and listen to one of our original episodes in season 1. You'll find it there. But that means that the Braves are going to be getting him. Yes, they paid $29.4 million for him and Fletcher this year, and Fletcher's not going to play a big role. But after this season, they're going to have Kelnick extremely cheap for the next foreseeable future, which is what the Braves like to do. And if he turns out to be even better than a 108 runs created plus, better than a 2 war guy, awesome. If he turns out to be a bust, okay, they paid a lot of money this year on a team that doesn't even really need him because the Braves offense is yet again set to be stacked. But if he doesn't pan out, no harm, no foul, they can release him. They did not give up any type of insane talent to get him. Yeah, we saw Mike Soroka and Kyle Wright and a few other fan favorites, Nicky Lopez and some other guys gone due to subsequent trades that happened during this flurry of trades. Would those guys still have been dealt? This is still highly possible that a lot of those guys would have still been dealt, because other than Kyle Wright, most of those guys would not have been on the team anyways, because the Braves would not be giving them arbitration salaries, right? And again, there's a lot of trades that happen after and before the Jared Kelnick trade. That doesn't, just because they were all tied together, doesn't necessarily mean they were all specifically because of the Jared Kelnick trade. But, you know, it's a bunch of dominoes with a bunch of variables that fell through. The 29.4 is the trades that exactly happened with the Jared Kelnick, right? Jared Kelnick actually was even a little bit better than his 108 runs created plus in the first half of the season, with a 110 runs created plus. And that was with a slash line of 252, 320, 439. One thing you want to pay attention here to, though, is on July 19th, he kicked a water cooler and broke his foot and was out until when he came back, and there's only 15 games left in the season that he played, and his power was completely zapped. In those final 15 games, he had 13 hits and 12 of them were singles. So his power was completely gone, which in those 15 games dropped his runs created plus by 2%. So with a healthy Jared Kelnick, we might see more of like a 110 runs created plus type of guy. And then on top of that, he doesn't have to face, most likely will not be facing left-handed starting pitching because they brought him Adam Duvall, but we'll get more into that later. Some factors that seem, I guess you could say, negative against him during that 110 runs created plus, though, is that his batting average of balls in play was much higher than league average. And as we know, you can't just look just at that, but if you have a batting average of balls in play at 357, you could bet money, and most of the time win some money, that their batting average is going to drop over time. It's just, no one is going to maintain a 357 batting average of balls in play for a large chunk of time. It's just not going to happen. You may see it for like a singular season or so, but there, no one's career batting average of balls in play is going to be that high. Not even Luis Arraez. It depends on the season, the environment, changing of rules, but typically the batting average of balls in play, league average, is about 300 to 302, depending on which site you look, because not all sites track this. But that being said, that's a huge difference between 357. So there's a few things you want to look at when you're looking at batting average of balls in play, especially with guys like Jared Kelnick, which does not have a long history in the league yet. But you want to look at the league average around 300 to 302. But you also want to look and see at a player's career, like what their batting average of balls in play typically is, because players are all different, you know, with their approach. And sometimes players will have slightly lower batting average of balls in play than league average for their entire career. And some players that will have slightly above league average for their entire career, just based on their approach and how they hit the ball, if they spread the ball, and things like that. But that being said, no way Jared Kelnick is keeping a 357 for the entirety of career. It's just not going to happen. Another thing kind of drew my eye was his insanely high strikeout rate. But we'll get into that even further. But his strikeout rate was 32.6% last year. That's not good. That is not going to be, that's not going to spur a successful Major League Baseball career unless you're hitting bombs every time you go up to the plate. Jared Kelnick is not to that point yet. He only had 11 home runs last year. That being said, he did not play an entire season, right? So if he would have had an entire season without kicking a water cooler, he would have had more than 11 home runs, most likely. But my point is that he strikes out way too often. The good news is, though, that he also walks at a high clip. In fact, when he came back from injury, even though he did not hit any home runs, his on-base percentage those last 15 games was a 362. So that's well above average. And that is very good, especially if you have a number 8 hitter that's getting on base at a 362, followed by Michael Harris and then Ronald Acuna Jr., you're going to see some runs happening. Jared Kelnick does not have to be that guy that's hitting home runs all the time. He does not need to be the guy that's hitting a double all the time. If he's getting on base at a decent clip, batting probably 7th or 8th in the lineup, maybe 9th, then the Braves are going to be in a good spot. So if he can continue to have an on-base percentage like he did the final 15 games of the season, that's going to be a huge boon for the Atlanta Braves. All right, let's take a little break, and then we're going to dig into his underlying metrics, because as we all know, when you bring in a player, you don't bring in a player for what they've done in the past. You bring in a player hoping what they're going to do for your team in the future. All right, welcome back from break. So let's dig into the metrics. And when I say metrics, I mean like expectancy stats, right? Things that show that he could have actually been better over time, or that there were some things that really stuck out as something that's like, okay, this wasn't a fluke. He has some really good tools, right? And the reason that I say that is I'm very certain that this is the main reason that drew Atlanta Braves front office eye, is looking at his underlying metrics. And like I said, it's because they're trading for someone that they want to see happen, great things happen in the future, not just stuff that's happened in the past. But if we look at his 2023 StatCast numbers, they're fantastic. Of course, his strikeout rate, his chase rate, not so good, but we'll dig into that in a little bit. But the things that are good, that really stick out, his sweet spot percentage was in the top 9% of Major League Baseball. Sweet spot is, if you're unfamiliar with that, is the optimal launch angle between 8 degrees and 32 degrees. If you're hitting a ball at that launch angle, that highly raises your chances of getting a hit, especially if you're hitting the ball hard. If you're hitting the ball hard at that launch angle, that your chances of getting a hit significantly increases. And to go along with his sweet spot, the best 9% of Major League Baseball, which means he's making excellent contact when he does, is that he has an average exit velocity of the top 25% of Major League Baseball. So he's hitting it hard, often, on average, and in an optimal launch angle. His hard hit percentage is the best 27%. So not only is it, hard hit percentage and average exit velocity go hand in hand quite a bit, except they're quite different. Not quite different, but different enough that you need to have different sections. Average exit velocity is, that includes all hits, meaning even the ones that you hit slowly that go into play, and what the average miles per hour off the bat is. Whereas hard hit percentage is what percentage of hits that you hit are considered a hard hit. Slightly different, and it does tell slightly different stories of a player. His walk rate was in the best 32% of Major League Baseball. That's not an expectancy stat, that's just what happened on the field, but that's still very encouraging. Like I said, if you can have a guy in the bottom quarter or bottom three of the lineup that has a walk rate in the top 32%, you're going to be doing some damage. And then his expected batting average, based on his sweet spot percentage, average exit velocity, and all that kind of stuff, was in the top 33%. And finally, the one that really sticks out to me, that makes me excited to have him on the team, and you probably could have guessed this based on his sweet spot percentage and average exit velocity, but if you look at his expected weighted on-base average, when he makes contact with the ball, or ex-woba con, as some people call it, expected weighted on-base average, which if you're unfamiliar with expected weighted on-base average, think of it like this. It's a better version of OPS plus or something else like that, because it factors in walks, singles differently, more accurately. It factors in the importance of getting a single, double, triple, home run, a walk, and weights them much differently than just your typical OPS plus, right? So weighted on base average factors in the ballpark and all that kind of stuff. So expected weighted on base average, honestly, is my favorite when looking at how well a hitter is doing or how terrible a pitcher is doing by the expected weighted on base average they're giving up. But the thing that makes it a little bit difficult to use sometimes is that if you're looking at numbers like an ex-WOBA of 340, right? That's good, by the way, but what it, the average fan or whatever is not going to just look at that number and be like, okay, that's awesome. They don't know because it's one, it's relatively new, and it's hard to compare an ex-WOBA of 340 to say like a 300. Is a 300 good? Is a 300 bad? I don't know because the stat hasn't been around. I mean, I know, but the average fan wouldn't know without looking it up. Whereas if someone sees, you know, runs created plus of 108, that's pretty easy to grasp. You can say, okay, 108 means 8% better than league average. Cool, got it. If I see an ex-WOBA of 340, I'm not saying, oh, that's, you know, whatever percentage better than league average, because it's not right there hitting me in the face with it. It's a good stat to look at if you're going to do a deep dive on players, for sure. And then also another thing you can do, if it'll help you figure out how good it is you can just look at like a player's how well they're doing against the league. So like on StatCast, if you were to look at someone's expected weighted on-base average is in the top 25% or whatever, you'll be able to tell real quick if that it's good or not. Another way you can do it is you can use the StatCast filter by statistics, and it'll show you what the league average ex-WOBA is for that year because it changes every year. That being said, back to Jerry Kelnick, his expected weighted on-base average when he makes contact with the ball is in the top 10% of Major League Baseball. So when Jerry Kelnick makes contact, he's elite. So as long as he makes contact, he's going to make something happen. That, to me, is the one thing that draws my eye to, okay, Jared Kelnick has serious potential. If the Braves can work on his strikeouts and his chase rate, if they can get it to where he starts hitting the ball more often and does not chase it outside of the zone, he is going to be elite with that bat. He just got to be able to lay off, stop swinging so much when he shouldn't. If we want to get more specific, we can. In fact, we're going to. Why not? We're here, right? We're only 20-ish minutes into the podcast. Let's dig in a little deeper, all right? Let's dig into where Jared Kelnick is struggling and what he can work on. So as we talked about, one of his strengths is when he makes contact, it's elite. Well, unfortunately, one of the things that he really struggled with last year was just that, making contact. When it came down to swinging and missing, he would swing and miss 33.8% of the time last year. If that sounds bad, that's because it was. Only 9% of Major League Baseball qualified hitters were worse than that last year. And not only that, but when it comes to chasing the ball, that what I mean by that is swinging at pitches outside the strike zone, he did that 28.5% of the time. And that put him in the bottom 54%, meaning that only 46% of MLB players did worse than that. So, yes, he's elite at hitting the ball, or making, he's elite at when the ball comes off the bat, that good things happen, but the bat's not hitting the ball like it should, which has resulted in, you know, negative outputs on a lot of situations. But what it really comes down to is that he really struggled against the off-speed and slider. So off-speed meaning like changeup. And he really struggled against the slider and the sweeper. You know, sweeper is kind of a new pitch. It's been around, but they've really started classifying it as something different than the slider. It's a little bit flatter than the slider. But either way, he really struggled against the sweeper and the slider the most. But he did fine on the fastball. But as far as the sweeper and the slider, those were the two worst pitches, followed by the breaking ball. If we look at breaking pitches as a whole, which includes slider, sweeper, curveball, etc., he had a swing and miss rate of 43.3%. That means 43.3% of the time, if a pitcher threw a breaking ball, whether it was in the strike zone or not, he would swing at it and miss. And then 42% of the time on off-speed pitches. Like I said, he did just fine on the fastball, but the problem is that pitchers knew that he was struggling on breaking off-speed, it appears, because he only saw fastballs about 43% of the time. So when you're swinging and missing almost half the time on pitches that you're seeing more than half the time, that spells a high strikeout rate. And that's what we were seeing with Jared Kelnick. Specifically the sweeper, he only saw 75 of them last year. Pitchers aren't throwing sweepers as much as you might think. So at least that's a positive, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. Glass half full. But he had a 64.3% swing and miss rate against the sweeper. And then he also had a 45.2% swing and miss rate against the slider. The slider was the second most seen pitch by him. Only pitch he saw more than that specifically was the four-seam fastball. So remember how I said, you know, the amount of times he saw the pitching categories? If we break it down by specific pitch, it was fastball, the four-seam fastball was number one, followed by slider. So pitchers threw him the slider quite often. The good news is that when he does make contact with the slider, he makes excellent contact. See, that's the thing with Kelnick. If he makes contact, it's good. But he has to make contact for it to be good. And I'll give an example. Remember how I said the slider was a poor pitch for him as far as swinging and missing? But if you look at just the pitch itself, his expected batting average was a .247 against the pitch, and his expected slugging percentage was a .418 on that pitch. And to put that in perspective, because the average person, myself included, isn't going to know how good those numbers are in comparison to the rest of the league without looking it up. Let's just be honest here. I'm not going to look at a .247 and be able to tell you right off the top of my head if that's above average or not on a specific pitch like the slider. No one freaking remembers that. So I'll tell you though, the league average expected batting average last season against the slider was a .224. Kelnick's was a .247. So it was much better. And the average expected slugging percentage against the slider last year was .372 and Kelnick's was .418. So as you can see, Kelnick was much better than league average on the slider itself. It's just that he swung and missed against it far too often. If Kelnick played like he did all last year though, for the entire season, it's not like with these flaws he's going to be a bad player. He was on pace for a 2 wins above replacement season. That's fantastic for your number 8 hitter or your 8th best player on your team, essentially. That's still going to be awesome output. Not to mention the Braves brought in Adam Duvall to platoon with him. Adam Duvall on a 1-year, $3 million deal. As we all know by now, Adam Duvall historically has crushed lefties. In fact, he's had years where his OPS plus was over 70% better than league average against lefties. For his career, his OPS plus against lefties is 10% better than league average. So if you have one hitter hitting against lefties that has a 110 OPS plus, and then if you have Kelnick against righties, who last year was 5% better against league average against righties, if you have an average of an OPS plus that's over 100 for the position, that's fantastic for your quote-unquote worst offensive or bottom three offensive player on the team. That's fantastic. So glass half full, even if Kelnick has some flaws, if he plays like he did last year, bring in Adam Duvall, that's amazing for a number 7, 8, or 9 hitter having an OPS plus over 100. You will not find many teams, if any at all, besides the Braves, that can say that. And just for what it's worth, even though they will be platooning, we saw 73.62% of pitches thrown by right-handed pitchers last year. So Kelnick is still going to get a large majority of the playing time if it is a true platoon like Mark Bowman is saying, which I do believe to be true, at least in this moment in time. And at the end of the day, if Kelnick doesn't work out, the Braves are not going to be on the hook for a lot of money after this season anyways. So honestly, it looks like a lot at first to give up for him, but truly it's not that much of a gamble, because if he doesn't work out, they can just cut him loose and not have any dead money that they have to pay him, because he's an arbitration player starting next year. And they didn't mortgage the future to bring him in. They really didn't. Not to mention, the Braves didn't know this obviously, but the two players they traded for him in that deal, the initial deal, is that are both undergoing Tommy John surgery right now. So the Braves, you know, those players would have not been available to the Braves for a while either. So, I mean, it turned out that this trade, even if Kelnick doesn't work out, it wasn't a bad deal. And I do hope that those other two guys do get better and do great things for the Mariners. All right, that's this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining in. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review on the Braves Country Cooking podcast feed on Apple. You can follow the show at Braves Dugout Podcast or my personal Twitter at SPeopleSports or X, whatever they're calling it these days. We have a Facebook page that's blowing up. Make sure you like the Facebook page. And we have a Facebook group, Happy to Talk Baseball, and that group is always fun to do. You can email the show at BravesDugout@gmail.com for any business inquiries. As always, make sure and check out the other shows on the Fans First Sports Network. They got some great shows out there. As always, go Braves. See you guys next week.